Awesome. Well, welcome to Hoboken Grace. Today we kick off a new series called Bedrock. And if you don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm a teaching pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we're super excited to have you. This new series is about how we can begin to unearth the foundation of an unshakable family. Now, whenever you begin to talk about family, things get a little bit interesting, especially because We come from so many different backgrounds and so many different traditions, and there's so many different influences out there concerning family and what family is supposed to look like. And so you could talk to 100 different people about what family is supposed to look like, and you're probably going to get 100 different answers. And there's all sorts of things that we interact with and things that are trying to in some way, shape, or form influence this idea of family. So when you come to this conversation about an unshakable family or what family's supposed to look like, things can get a little bit interesting. And what I've found is that for a lot of us, as we interact with this idea of family, there seems to be this idea that, well, you don't really know. And because of the fact that there are so many different influences and we come from different cultures and different traditions, what I've found is that oftentimes what will happen is that we'll settle in on this idea that, well, you know what? You can't really know for sure anyway. And so you just kind of do what you think you're supposed to do and hope that it works out. Have you ever heard that before? I'd be willing to bet you probably have, if you've had this conversation with other people. And as I've become a parent and especially interacting with other parents and other families about what family is supposed to look like, I hear it all the time. You know, you can't really know. You know, how do you think you're supposed to raise your kids? Well, you can't really know. So you just kind of do what you've picked up along the way and what you think is the best, and you hope for the best. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, that doesn't sound like hope at all. Because I don't know, maybe I'm the odd man out here, but in my experience, whenever I work off of what I naturally think is right, or what I've picked up along the way, things go really bad. Maybe I'm the odd man out here, but for me, I find it happens all the time. And so when Anna and I first got married, we're trying to figure out what this looks like. And so you just kind of work off of what you think is right. I remember when we first got married, Anna was trying to learn how to cook, and that's always an interesting situation. But she was working really hard, and I didn't make it any easier because shortly after we got married, we found out that I had celiac, which means now she has to learn how to cook without using wheat, which is almost impossible for us in the United States of America. It's getting more and more possible, but especially when we found out, it was very, very difficult. And so we would sit down at a meal, and she worked to be able to create this meal, and we'd sit down, and I thought, right, that if you're trying to get better at something, you need feedback. Right? That's natural. That makes sense. Just working off of what I thought was right and best. And so we'd sit down and I'd start eating. I'd be like, man, this is really good, but it could use this. Or maybe next time you could change this a little bit. And one night I'm sharing with her this constructive, helpful feedback. And it wasn't like, oh, this is terrible, I hate this. It was always like really, you know, lovingly delivered. I thought, man, this is gonna be great for her. One night I'm sharing with her and she slams her plate down. She's like, every meal you have something to say. And I was like, whoa. I didn't realize that this was gonna be a problem. And she began to lay out for me what was happening. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like this must have been awful for you. But for me, it wasn't that I was trying to be mean or insensitive or anything. Just naturally, I thought that this was going to be great. I mean, some of you are thinking you're kind of not too smart there, Chris. I'll give you that, right? I definitely should have seen it coming, but I really didn't. For me, this idea that you just do what you think is right and then you hope for the best, I don't know. That doesn't sound like hope to me at all. And then you bring it into this area of family. Oh my goodness. Family is one of those areas in our lives where there seems to be more potential for pain than any other. There's just this tremendous amount of potential for pain and destruction. And so to just go into it and hope for the best, is that really the best we can do? I don't think so. I think in your life and my life, I think God is constantly working to bring hope. Not the hope that sometimes we talk about where you're just kind of hoping. It's almost like a wish based on nothing. That's not the hope that the Bible talks about. The hope that the Bible talks about is hope that's based on truth and demonstrated faithfulness of God. And I believe in every area of our life that God is trying to bring real hope. As we begin this conversation on family, I want to take you to a passage. It's found in Matthew chapter 7. We're going to begin in verse 24. I think this is a phenomenal promise that God makes to you and to me. Jesus is talking to his followers, and he says this in Matthew chapter 7. He says, "Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents, and the flood waters rise, and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it is built on bedrock." And this is where we got that title for this conversation that we're having. This is built on bedrock. "But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash." Jesus says, listen, guys, listen. There are all sorts of things that you can build your house on, that you can build your life on. He says, if you build it on tradition, if you build it on culture, if you build it on all of the different things that are going to come into your life and try to influence you, all the different voices, the voices of professionals, he's like, it's like building it on sand. It's always shifting and changing. He says, but if you will listen to what I have to say, and you will build your house on what I have to say, it's like building a house on bedrock. And the greatest of storms can come against it, but it will remain unshakable. It will remain unshakable. I had the opportunity a couple years ago to be able to see just the perfect illustration of this passage. It was kind of by accident. It came out of one of the worst decisions of my life. Anna and I had, at the time, a 2-year-old and about a 6-month-old, or maybe even less than that. It might even been more like a 3-month-old. And we decided, being the wise people that we were, that we were going to take our kids to Ecuador. Right? It sounds great when you say it, but when you do it, it's awful. Right? And so we decided we're going to take this trip. We're going to go to Ecuador for a couple weeks. It was going to be beautiful. It was going to be relaxing. My wife's from Ecuador. We get to meet all of her family. They get to meet the kids. You should never go there unless your kids are like 10 to 12 years old. I'm just going to give you the heads up on that, right? But we take them when they're really small. We had to go on a bus trip over the mountains for 8 hours overnight with a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. Okay? Whatever you're imagining in your mind of how bad that is, multiply it by 1,000 and you'll be just about there. It was terrible. And we thought the second half of the trip might be a little bit difficult because that's going to be in the mountains, but then the first half's going to be great because we're going to go stay at her aunt's beach house. And so as a matter of fact, we scheduled even more time to be able to stay at her aunt's beach house, a beach house in Ecuador. Doesn't that sound great? If I were to ask you, you want to go to her aunt's beach house next week? Most of you'd be like, yes, absolutely, because you don't have a clue. So we go to Ecuador. And when we first get there, there's a few things that kind of, I'm beginning to wonder, okay, what is this really going to look like? What's really going to happen here? But I'm okay. We're going to get to the beach. It's going to be great. Work had been really stressful. So I was ready just to relax for a little bit. And we started driving to this beach house. Going down the highway, get off the highway. All of a sudden, the roads start getting a little rougher. And I'm like, where are we going? Oh, no, it's going to be great. It's beautiful. This house is amazing. All of a sudden, pavement ends. Dirt road. I'm like, where are we going? Oh, it's going to be great. This house is amazing. I grew up on a dirt road. I know sometimes dirt roads can lead to really great places, but sometimes dirt roads lead to really bad places. And we keep going down this dirt road. All of a sudden, the dirt road is no longer really a road. There's like water has washed out ravines in this dirt road. And we pass the name of this town. And one of the individuals in the car is like, oh, isn't this the town where we're staying? And I look around us and I'm like, no, that must be a mistake. This is not where we're staying. Because as we've driven along, all of a sudden there were cement block homes. And then all of a sudden there were cement blocks with no tops on them. And then all of a sudden the houses began to be made out of cardboard. And it was just like going downhill fast. And we get into this town, and they're like, isn't this a town? I'm like, oh, please, God, please don't let this be the name of the town. And it's confirmed. And we're trying to make our way through this town, but our car really can't drive very quickly because of these ravines in the road. I have pictures of this. I didn't bring them with me today, but if you don't believe me, I have pictures of this to confirm it, right? The pigs on the side of the road can walk faster than we can, right? And not because someone's driving them or with them. There are just pigs just in the town, right? And there's wild dogs. It's like, I'm looking at my wife thinking, we're all going to die. And we get into this town and we pull into this complex. Her aunt has this house. It's got like a giant wall built all the way around it. And the house is really beautiful. It really was. We locked that gate as fast as we could because we're driving in and these people are just unbelievably poor. And then we're of course the Americans who have like 59 luggages strapped to the top of our car, right? Pulling into this thing. And I'm just thinking, they're all going to attack us as soon as they get the chance at night. And I mean, literally terrified. We get into the house and for the next couple of days, we're like locked in there. No one wants to leave. No one feels safe to leave. But then finally, my father-in-law and I decided that we were going to go out and explore. And we went down to the beach. And when we first got there, we checked out the beach. But we found out that you couldn't really go to the beach and enjoy it because it was just covered in trash. And so we literally stayed inside the house all the time that we were there, but my father-in-law and I decided that we were going to go out and kind of explore and see the rest of the town and just figure out what in the world happened. Because you could see that there was at time homes that were being built or halfway built. And we went down to the beach and we began to walk along the beach. And I saw something that just blew my mind. To this day, it blows my mind. We're walking down the beach. And the beach was pretty wide. It was probably about from that back wall to maybe 3 or 4, maybe 5 rows deep into the crowd here. And it was all pretty flat, and the water was, you know, pretty decent ways out there. And we're walking along, and right at that point, there was a cliff that would go up. It was made of sand, like a solid sand cliff, about 10 to 12 feet. And as we're walking along on the top of this cliff, one after another, after another, after another, there were halves of houses. Like perfect halves of houses. It was crazy. And you'd look at the top of the cliff, and on the top of the cliff, there'd be a big cement slab that the house was built on, and then the walls would go up, and these weren't small houses. Some of these houses had basketball courts that were built into them. They had sand beach volleyball courts around the outside. They had tennis courts. There was one house that there was just like 3/4 of a tennis court that was in the yard, that like a really nice tennis court. But like a quarter of it had just dropped off the edge of this cliff. And we're walking through these houses, and of course they've been stripped of everything nice, but you could see, I mean, they're huge, like mansions. And so we went back to the house and we started talking to her aunt about what happened. And it turns out that the wealthy people from Guayaquil had built this city. And it was just this beach town where they had these phenomenal mansions all along this waterfront. And they'd go out there, and every weekend they'd just go out there and enjoy the weekend out there and then come back to the city and work there. But then there was a storm that came. Just this massive storm, and it came in. And what it did is it just came in and took all the sand out. And when the sand got washed out, literally one by one, the houses just fell in half, like crumbled into the water. And as I was walking past those houses, one after another after another, I could not keep this verse from just coming back to me. And the words of Jesus are saying, listen, you look at building your home, and you look at building your house, you can build it on what I say, or you can build it on all the different things and all the different voices that you're going to hear around you. But if you build it on that, I want you to know what it's like. It's like building your house on sand. You build your house on sand, it may look beautiful for a while. But when the storm comes, and the storm will come, it'll wipe it out. And you may find yourself left with just half. And the power of that, as I looked at that, and just thought of how many families are left with just half. And for a while, it looked beautiful, it looked incredible. But it wasn't built on something that would last. It wasn't built on something solid. And so the truth is, at the end of the day, it crumbled. Jesus Christ steps into your life and my life and says, I want to make sure that that doesn't happen to you. But you have to listen to me. You have to listen to what I'm saying and what I'm instructing you in. As we walk through the next few weeks, this is the foundation of our conversation. This hope that we have that we can take what God is teaching us about how to build our lives and our families, and we can build families on that truth, that will encounter some unbelievable storms, but will remain unshakable. This is the foundation. And this leads us back to Ephesians. For the last month, we've been walking through the book of Ephesians, but we're not done with Ephesians yet. As a matter of fact, we're going to be walking through Ephesians for the next month as well. And for the past month, we've been looking at, in Ephesians, this story that we're a part of, this story that God is telling, and how we get to be part of this with Him. And from the very beginning of Ephesians, the entire conversation is about family. And so He's talking about how He's building His family, how He's establishing His family, how He's purchased us to be part of that family, how He's adopted us into that family. And Ephesians 1 through 3, that's the entire thing, is about how He's bringing together this family. But as He moves on, in chapters 4, 5, and 6, He builds on that and says, okay, now that you've been adopted into this family, this is how you live inside this family. This is how this family works. If you will, it's like a dad sitting down with the family. Mom and dad sit down and say, okay, kids, here's the deal. This is how our family works. And that's what He's doing with us in Ephesians. He's sitting down and saying, okay, now that you've been adopted in this family, I want you to understand, this is how we interact with one another. This is how we're going to be a family together. And He's laying out this understanding of how the family operates. And as He does, he does something that's very, very important, or should be very, very important to us. He begins to talk not just about how we relate to one another generally inside this family, but then He begins to break it down and talk about how we relate inside of our own personal families as well. And so you get to Ephesians chapter 5, and He begins to break down the roles inside of our personal families and say, basically, okay, because you're a part of this larger family, now inside of your personal families, this is how you need to operate. And he's basing it off of how he's building his larger family. And so in light of how I'm doing it, now this is how you do it. I want to take you to that passage. It starts in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21. And as he gets to this point in the book, he's coming to his final stretch here. And as he comes to this point, he's been walking through, okay, this is how we operate inside this family. He comes to this point and says, now let me sum it up for you, and then I'm going to break it down for you. So he sums it up for us in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, and then he begins to break it down for us. It says, so in verse 21, he says, and further, so again, continuing to help us understand how we operate inside this, and further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So this is what I want you to do. I want you, as you're part of this larger family, to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then he begins to break it down by our personal family roles. This is for wives. This means submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For a husband is the head of his wife as Christ is the head of the church. He is the Savior of his body, the church, and the church submits to Christ, so you wives should submit to your husbands in everything. For husbands, this is what it means for you to submit, right? We're submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. For husbands, this means love your wives, just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without a spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man who loves his wife actually shows love for himself. No one hates his own body, but feeds and cares for it, just as Christ cares for the church. And we are members of his body. As the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. This is a great mystery, but is an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. So again, I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. So he says, okay, wives, this is what it looks like. All of you submit to one another. Wives, this is what it looks like. Husbands, this is what you looks like. But he doesn't stop there. And he says, now children, this is what it looks like for you. Obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you and you will have a long life on the earth. Fathers, parents, this is what it looks like for you. Do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. And if you have the passage with you, if you've pulled it up online, you can see that as he continues, it goes further and further and further where he's breaking down this understanding of what it means to submit to one another. So he comes to the end of this. He's like, listen, guys, this is this family that God's bringing together. This is how we operate inside this family. And then inside of your own personal families, because of the fact that you're part of this larger family, this is how you operate. And it's unbelievably important that you understand that from the very beginning of the book, he's actually been talking about submission. Now, he doesn't use the word until you get here, but from the beginning of the book, he's been talking about how God has built his family based on submission, based upon the fact that Jesus Christ came and he gave himself for you, that he became a servant to you so that you could be part of this family. And God's saying, look at how I've built my family based on submission. Now, for you, if you want to build a family inside of this family, you build it on submission. Not just one of the roles, not just two of the roles, all of the roles. You build it on submission. Now, in order to be able to understand fully what he's talking about here, you have to change, I think, a little bit the way that you think about submission. Because I think for a lot of us, we have in our minds the definition that you would see if you were to look it up inside the dictionary. So if you look up submit inside the dictionary, it says this: accept or yield to a superior force or to the authority or will of another person. Inside of our culture, we talk about submission as it pertains to power or authority. And so we say, okay, the weaker needs to submit to the stronger. And so I, because of the fact that I recognize that you're stronger than me, or because I recognize the fact that you have more authority than me, then I'm going to submit to you. I don't believe that that's what the Bible's talking about when it talks about submission. As a matter of fact, I think Jesus is trying to help his disciples understand this when he's talking about leadership with them. Because he says to them, listen, as you're in leadership, for you it's going to be different than it is with the world. Because with the world, leaders have all this authority and power and they lord it over people, forcing them to submit to them. He said, but for you it's going to be different. You're going to be the leader, but rather than lording over them, you're going to actually submit to them. You're going to serve them rather than lord over them. See, I think the biblical definition or the biblical idea of submission is very different than what we culturally might think of it, because biblically, it's not this idea that I'm stronger than you. Biblically, the idea of submission has nothing to do with strength or authority. It's not something that we do to people who are stronger or more authoritative than us. It's one of the keys to actually loving well. That I submit. And so it's not delegated to just one role inside the family, but it's given to all the roles. And so no matter how much authority or power you have, you submit. I think the actual biblical idea is probably captured best in a passage that we talk about quite frequently here at Hoboken Grace in Philippians chapter 2, where it says that we are to have the same mindset that Jesus Christ had, that we think of others as more important than ourselves. And I believe that this is what the writer of Ephesians is trying to help us understand in the first three chapters of how God is building his family, that he thought of us as more important than himself. And so he chose to write the story because he chose you. And he became your servant, even though he has far more power or authority than you will ever have. And he gave his life to be able to bring you into this family. This idea of submission is not so much about finding the person with the authority and then placing yourself under them. It's about no matter how much authority or power you have, moving into the lives of those who are weaker than you and choosing to value them more than you value yourself. And God stepping into our lives and saying, okay, listen, I want you to understand, I'm building a family. This family is based on submission. And if you're looking to build a family inside of that family, it needs to be based on submission. Every aspect of it, every role, based on submission. As we come into today, I want to introduce this idea, but I want to introduce this idea in a way where you'll be able to really grasp it. The truth is that we're not going to get really practical until we get into the next few weeks. The next few weeks, we're going to begin breaking it down role by role and what that means to submit, what that means to consider others as more important than ourselves in these different roles inside of our families and inside of our larger family. But today, I wanted to be able to introduce this truth, and then I also wanted to be able to help you grasp it. And so, inside your program, you're going to find a 3x5 card. If you can, take that out and just kind of wave it at me. You're going to want to participate in this because it is actually a group participation. Just take that out and wave it. If you don't have one, Milius, can you grab some at the back if people want to grab one from you? Here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you a minute, and I want you to write down on that card your hopes and dreams. From the time that we're about this old, we start to live for certain hopes and dreams, things that we really want to see happen in our lives. Maybe it's your professional development, maybe it's your personal development, whatever it is. I want you to write it down on that card. And you can be as crazy as you want. Write your hopes and dreams. Now, I will let you know something. Other people are going to be able to read these, right? So don't get crazy on us, all right? And in order for you to participate, you got to make sure that this is something that you still want other people to read, right? But seriously, write down what it is that you hope to see happen in your life, the dreams that you have. And I'm just going to give you a minute. Jeff, if you can you find some music for us to be able to enjoy here as we do this? All right, go ahead. 1 minute. Perfect. Excellent. You see how the music lined up there? Great job, guys. At the first service, we didn't have that, and I challenged them to find it, and they did very, very well. Good job. So you wrote down there your hopes and dreams, right? I believe that this is the biblical idea of submission, and I believe this is what he's saying to each of us as he gets to these roles, right? He's saying, okay, husbands, this is what it means to submit. I want you to take your card, and I want you to set it aside. And I want you to ask your wife for theirs. I'm going to count down from three. If you're here and you're married, I want you to do that. All right? Husbands, I just want you to set aside yours and ask for hers. 3, 2, 1, go. This is not a huge married crowd, so there's like six of you here. This is wives. Here's the deal. This is what it looks like to submit. I want you to set aside your card, and I want you to ask your husband for his. I'm going to give you a chance to do that. 3, 2, 1, go. I know that some wives didn't ask. They're like, no, he can live for me, and I'm good. It says, children, this is what it looks like. You ask for your parents. You live to honor them. You work to honor them. You can hear it in almost every explanation that he gives. Listen to how he talks to husbands. He's like, listen, you're like Christ in the way he loves the church. He's trying to present her. He's trying to help her experience and live up to all of her potential. You set aside your card. And you pick up hers. It says, parents, here's what it looks like. You set aside your card and you pick up theirs. I remember being in a meeting once. I was in college. And we were meeting with this pastor. And he was talking to us, and several of us were pastor's kids, and you guys have all heard about pastor's kids, right? I mean, they're the most screwed up bunch of people you've ever met. They really are, usually, unfortunately. And this pastor was talking to those of us who were pastor's kids, and we were in school to become pastors, and so he wanted to see, like, you know, what did you experience as kids that brought you here? And so he began asking us about our parents. And it was interesting because as he talked to the different pastor's kids and about their experience growing up, many of them, I would say, I think there were four of us, and I think all three of the other kids said to this individual, you know, my dad was a great pastor, but he wasn't a great dad. And for those of you who know me, you know that I'm a very driven person. I love success. I love accomplishing things. I love doing things. And I remember growing up, I'd watch my dad over and over and over again make decisions. To take care of his family. That cost him his ability to be as successful as he could be. And as a child, I watched that, and me being who I am, at sometimes it really frustrated me because I thought, man, Dad, you could show people just how successful you could be. You could show people everything that you could accomplish. But you keep making these decisions to be with your family when you could be doing this. And growing up, I really didn't appreciate it the way that I did as I sat in that meeting. And it finally got to me, and they asked me, you know, so as you grew up, what was it like? I said, to be honest with you, my dad was a decent pastor, probably not the best, at least not compared to his potential. but he was an incredible dad. Maybe the best I've ever seen. Because my dad understood this principle. He decided to build his house on rock. And you know what's interesting? People interact with me and my sisters, and all of us are doing really, really well. And parents, I hear him say it to my dad all the time. They have kids that are struggling, families that are struggling, homes that are collapsing. And they say to my dad all the time, "Wow, you got really lucky. You got really lucky." No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He decided to build his home on a rock. You build your home on a rock. The truth of what Jesus Christ has to say. You decide to sacrifice your ability to be great at this or that or the other in order to make sure that your wife experiences as much of her potential as possible. Your kids experience as much of their potential as possible, even if it costs you yours. You build your home on a rock, and you will discover what it means to have an unshakable family. Matthew chapter 7 is a promise. And some of you are here today, and you're looking at this situation, you're saying to yourself, "Well, wait a second, I'm not married. I don't have kids yet. This doesn't really apply to me." And you're thinking that you're just learning something for the future. But that's only true if you ignore the context of the entire book of Ephesians. Because the book of Ephesians is not just about how to operate inside of our own personal families. It's about how we are part of this unbelievable family. And so this doesn't just apply if we're married or if we have kids. This idea of submitting, it doesn't stop. As the passage continues, I told you earlier, it doesn't just stop with those family roles, those personal family roles. It continues. Why? Because it applies to all of us. This idea that as we're part of this larger family, we move into one another's lives and we say to each other, "Give me your card. Let me see your card. So I can help you be all that you were created to be." Even if it means that I don't get to experience what's on mine. So here's what I want you to do. If you haven't already exchanged cards with someone, on the count of three, I want you to find someone and I want you to ask them for their card. And to understand, a family does not begin when you're married or when you have kids. Family began the moment you decided to trust Jesus Christ with your life. And you have been adopted as part of an unbelievable family that we get to live together. So on the count of three, find someone's card. 3, 2, 1, go. Now you just learned some awkward information about somebody you didn't know before. You're like, "Hi, my name is, and here's my hopes and dreams." This is what God's building. A family. Inside of that, we can be part of building incredible families as well. Inside of that, we get to be part of an incredible family as well. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be breaking down what that looks like and how all of these different things impact not only how we relate to one another, but how we experience God and how we're able to love God and be part of this family together. And this morning, we get to celebrate. And the band's going to come back up, and you guys can come up, and we're going to celebrate what God's been doing for the past 6 years and how God's been building this family. And we're going to celebrate it in some loud and exciting ways. And so you guys see these balloons up here, be ready for it, okay? It's coming. All right, we're going to celebrate this. I want to take you to a passage this morning. One last passage before I turn it over to the band. It's found in Psalm 68, verses 4 through 6. It says, "Sing praises to God and to his name. Sing loud praises to him who rides the clouds. His name is the Lord. Rejoice in his presence." Now listen to this. This is crucial. Listen to this. "Father to the fatherless, defender of widows. This is God whose dwelling is holy." And tell me that this isn't the story for so many of us. God places the lonely in families. That's our story. That's the story of Hoboken Grace. If there's anything that we can say about the last 6 years, it's this: that God has placed the lonely in families. And this morning we celebrate him at this 6 year mark with all that we have. Because he's been a father to the fatherless. And he has placed the lonely in families. Will you pray with me? Father, today as we move into this celebration, it's all about you. All about the family that you've been building and how you have placed the lonely in families. And Father, we pray that as we experience your family, that we would continue to move into one another's lives to be the family that you've called us to be and to build families that you've called us to build and that you've given us the hope to be able to know can be unshakable. You are an amazing God, and we celebrate you with all that we have. In Jesus' name.